Welcome to episode 90 of Free Radical Radio. I am probably your most consistent host of the show in the history of it, so far as I believe in history or linear time, and I'm sitting next to two people that often are referred to as human beings. Hello, Squee.
I don't know if that's actually very often. You're also the only one with a business card.
That's not true. Bellamy has business cards.
Yeah, but they're not allowed to use them.
No, that's true. We have revoked Bellamy's business cards. And we're sitting next to Kelpsey from the Great North, the Great Beyond. You've crossed a border to join us, actually, huh?
Hello. It was well worth it.
Oh, yeah? Do you have positive experiences this week?
Of the Bay? A little bit of positivity, a little bit of humanism, a little bit of too many thoughts.
So what we're doing today is we're basically just going to talk about the book fair yesterday because it happened, and I guess it's relevant. Who knows, really? But we're going to talk about all the conversations since Squee and I were organizers. But really, I would just say more Squee than I. I can't really take too much credit for any of the good or any of the bad that happened yesterday. I've been too busy putting together Star Wars figurines for my nanny job in the city.
Out of Legos.
It's actually extremely difficult. And I did feel a little bit of what it must be like to be an assembly worker. I can only do it for 30 minutes, I'll admit. And I got tired and my hands started hurting too much. I think there's like an arthritis thing going on or something. But I don't know how people do that all day. I'm going to tell you that right now. I mean, how do your fingers even work at that point?
I don't know. I've been getting this thing with my finger, though, from using the crutches. It's called trigger finger. And I wake up in the morning and my finger is just bent. Only one of them. And I have to spend about 2 hours unbending it.
All right, Kelpsey. So where are you joining us from? Give us some info here.
I guess I'm from Vancouver, Canada, and I don't think.
Are you a big Harper fan?
Definitely. I actually voted for him in the last election.
Oh, good.
A little bit of an accelerationist sometimes.
Okay, so we're just gonna have a talk, and everyone's gonna jump in when we get to it. So I wanted to mention though that we have new T-shirts. They're up online, freeradicalradio.net. Squee's wearing one right now. Why don't you tell us a little bit about this shirt?
What's going on there?
Well, my first impression was, great, it's two people shooting at a dandy. And I thought it was sort of a joke, you know, that people were playing on me. But then I looked a little closer and realized that it was actually a business tie and not awesome.
Yeah.
Like a dandy.
Well, it's a nuclear scientist. It's Shia LaBeouf as a nuclear scientist.
Right. So there's two people on a motorcycle, as you might, you know, basically trying to kneecap them. It's great. It's black and white. My favorite colors.
Yeah, and in case you didn't notice, we're still doing audiobooks and we're accepting submissions. Some people have been sending us some cool stuff, so we're happy to put it out for you. I know there's like other projects also, but if you want to send it our way, go ahead. And if it's interesting to us, we'll put it up. And if it's not, we'll just send you a bag of flaming poop back in the mail if you put a returning address or something. So that's happening. Anyways, what'd you guys think of tabling yesterday? How do you feel about sitting there all day while people come and take your shit and are weird to you?
I avoided a lot of it. I don't know if it's really avoiding. I sort of had other things I had to do. But apparently some people came up to the table looking for me and mistook someone else for me.
Do they have anything interesting to say?
I don't know. I didn't get any of the juice.
It remains a mystery, huh?
Yeah.
All right.
I avoided tabling as well, but there was a table from the Great White North, REC, and people came down from Canada, and there's various publications from different things that are going on up there. One of them is an insurrectionary anarchist publication, some whining, some rants, some ideas about pipelines and the struggle that is relevant to that.
That's REC or that's something else?
It's REC.
REC. Mm-hmm. Like a car REC, like R-W, no, with a W. W-R-E-C-K. Okay. Is it a pun?
And it carries the theme of boat wreck for some reason. Something about the coastal city.
That's nice. I do enjoy coastal city. So you got me halfway there. Okay. So the first talk that no one of us went to was Rojava. We also have it. Paul Simons gave it, from a writer from Anarchy Mag. He was on the show recently for an interview, which you can find if you look online. But none of us went. Was there any particular reason? I mean, I guess a close friend of mine was giving the other talk. So that's my main reason. But
yeah, I didn't go because he did the interview and I figured I probably heard it. And I also wanted to go to the one that a close friend of ours was.
Yeah. And Burst gave a pretty comprehensive interview on Final Straw Radio. If you're trying to get your Rojava on.
Isn't it like a four-parter?
I think it's like a three or four. I think it's three parts. It could be four, but pretty comprehensive. So Yeah. So the first talk we did go to, which I thought was interesting because Kelpsey came down with some other friends and we ended up getting in a pretty hilarious argument on the roof about it, was mass shootings. And I don't know how to frame it exactly. Do you want to frame the talk, Squee, exactly?
Yeah, I'll frame the talk. It started off with one of these mass shooters. I never remember names for the life of me, but they called in John Zerzan's Anarchy Radio show.
Adam Lanza,
and gave this whole rant about how this monkey that was basically raised in a domestic environment and fed Xanax and knew how to watch TV with a remote and all that shit wilded out one day and attacked the owner. And they were making the comparison that this is what civilization does to people too, and it's probably why mass shootings happen. And then they carried on to talk about a few other mass shooters and chart out some of the similarities in their manifestos or online remnants and what basically the themes that keep coming up and how they relate to some of the stuff that anarchists like to say.
Yeah, so I guess some of the major themes were, like, society being shitty, like Eric Harris and Dylan Klybold, the Columbine kids, they seemed pretty hateful towards society in general. Same with, I forget their name, Cho something, the person that did Virginia Tech, I think. And
right.
Yeah, it seemed like those were the major themes. But
I think Cho was the last name.
Right, yeah.
Oh.
Or something Cho. But I don't know, did you guys feel that had relevance to anarchy or to the Anarchist Project, or like did that critique matter to like the way you guys view civilization, or did any of that resonate with you guys?
Well, when they started off, they specifically mentioned, going to high school when the Columbine shooting happened and how that was a big impact on their lives. And for me, it certainly was too. I mean, I got red flagged and all that good stuff. I don't know how that relates to me as an anarchist. I think the being an anarchist at that time, even in high school, was why I was kind of singled out. But
well, I guess what I'm getting at is, do you think it's more about the shootings themselves, or do you think it's about the way like the average anarchist tends to respond to the shootings that was the relevance?
I didn't feel like they focused on how the average anarchist... Well, they did talk about it a little, that they like, what's his fuck, the cop?
Chris Dorner.
Yeah, that anarchist like Chris Dorner more than some of these other shooters, but...
Well, he killed cops. That's usually generally a favorable move.
Yeah, and not kids.
Oh, yeah, like Revic.
Brevik?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a pretty interesting discussion on Brevik. One of the weirdest things I thought that they talked about was... He's the guy who was up on that island in Norway or whatever at the kids' camp and shot like 80 or 90 kids or people, killed a lot of kids. But there's one part where he was saying he had like 5 kids up against the wall and he was about to shoot them. And he was like, it's not like a video game at all. They were all just standing there and none of them said anything and none of them moved. And that's kind of like, I don't know, maybe that's like a logic of submission type thing. But I get why people would freeze, but I feel like it's kind of strange not to make a run for it in that situation.
Yeah, well, then again, Norway doesn't have gun violence anywhere near the way that they do here.
Yeah, but I mean, like, I'm someone who guns have not been relevant for in their life, but I guess maybe I would just freeze. Who knows?
I've definitely had my gun aimed at me experiences, and I ran like fuck. But I thought, the relevance came in when they started talking about how every single shooter had the theme of promoting their ideas of what justice are and correcting the injustice in society and how this kind of relates to a social anarchist mentality.
Yeah. See if you want to talk. Yeah, the righting the wrongs type thing was pretty interesting. I think they use a lot of those metaphors too, like of justice, balancing the scales, things like that, which is funny because on some level they're using a lot of the same rhetoric that like an anti-oppression social justice minded human being might use, but at the same time they're clearly using tactics that they would not use, because despite all the calls for violent or for despite all the ways that people talk about that, like there's like a level of tolerable violence more or less, it seems like, within justice. unless someone is like a rapist, then you can kill them. But beyond that, for the most part, it's like you don't kill the person. You like whatever, you give them a trial or something. I mean, even people seem pretty satisfied. A lot of people in the streets call for like, or people will get outraged when someone doesn't get convicted or indicted on charges. And it's like, what did you want? Did you want them to go through the shitty prison system that you don't like? It's like, it's a very confusing and kind of weird thing to see anarchists getting upset that someone didn't get convicted on charges, even if it was fucking Hitler. Like, is that still what you want, to put someone in jail? You still want the jail? It's kind of, it seems like kind of a lazy thought line to me.
And I think that's why the conversation was interesting for me, because a lot of the quotes that were brought up of the mass shooters had a lot of resonance with individualist or nihilist anarchists, and yet there was this distaste for like their actions. And yeah,
I don't think people are generally fans of people shooting kids, which is, I mean, other stuff people write about it, like ideas of the child and things like that get brought up about how we have like some weird veneration of kids, which I probably do on some level too. I mean, mostly just because I hate adults, so it's easier to look at a kid who's not yet as big of a piece of shit as the adults you see running around and be like, oh, they're just a kid. Like, at least they have a shot of not being a fucking worthless piece of shit when they grow up, you know?
You know what was great was, who was the shooter that just decided they did not care about rationality at all anymore and, like had the RC car that they...
That was the Batman shooter.
The neuroscientist?
Yes. So one of the shooters, like, their plan while they were doing the shooting at the movie theater was to leave techno music turned up really loud at their house and have their apartment apartment kind of lined with explosives. And then if the cops didn't get called because of the music, they left a remote control race car or something that would be the trigger for the explosives if somebody happened to walk by and pick it up and turn it on, which seems like the last thing you would do, but...
Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting to think about, like, considering yourself an anti-social anarchist, which I guess we could talk about what that means, but I guess for what that means to me, I guess, is more or less, I don't feel an obligation to people I don't see myself in like an actual relationship with in any way, shape, or form. And to not consider those people is probably the main difference, I feel like, between social anarchists and antisocial anarchists, is like some responsibility for these greater situations and masses of people that you are not friends with at all, you know? And I think that's why it brings up these like the weird ways people use solidarity, like with things that they don't know anything about or places they're never going to be. And then you get stuck in this whole thing. But it's interesting because a lot of the shooters were it's obviously an antisocial turn to go kill all your classmates or like a bunch of strangers. But at the same time, like a lot of them wanted to be social. Like the guy that shot at Virginia Tech was basically like, this was preventable if people would have been nice to me or like been friends with me. And like the Columbine kids too, right? Like people were shitty to them, or a lot of people were bullied, and some of it sure is like betas or like shitty dudes that just want to get laid and, you know, they're not getting fucking laid, so they're going to go kill everyone. But, like, a lot of it is beyond that and is something different.
Sure. I don't know what else there is to say about it. I thought it was a well-done talk. There's two people presenting, so it kind of created a little bit of a back and forth, which was nice, and just one person.
Yeah. Okay, so there's also a talk on spiritual anarchy that we'll put online, but Squee and I didn't get to go to it, and we're going to listen to it. Maybe we'll talk about it in the next episode, but probably most of the talks we're talking about today, the actual talk will be online, and then our analysis will probably be irrelevant at that point, but that's fine. It's probably irrelevant to begin with anyways. But the other talk we went to that I was actually excited for and extremely disappointed in was the self-care for the damn conversation, because I was under the impression that it was going to be performance art, which, and like any break from the norm, I would support generally, you know? Just anyone fucking doing something different or weird or like pushing people or like not following the rules of like polite anarchist milieu society or whatever you want to consider it. But more or less, it just became group therapy. I don't know. How do you feel about it?
I think there's some sort of therapeutic element. I didn't expect the performance art a whole lot within that presentation, I thought other things were going to be happening during the book fair. I'll not say anything about that.
Yeah. Oh, things I had planned that I didn't do.
You had plans?
Yeah, I'll talk about it later.
Okay. So I think it turned out fine for what it was. I was worried that it was going to turn out to be, like, really, like, I don't know, just not a very engaging list of jokes about self-care stuff.
Right.
But it actually turned out to be an engaged thing, so I don't know.
What went on there? I looked over and I saw people with ropes.
No, that was a bunch of nothing. They were just, like, looking at each other with mirrors, and, like, they tied up someone a rope and, like, put makeup on some guy, but it was, like, all in the background, and to me didn't create, like, any type of aesthetic or feeling that changed the tone of the conversation. Except, I mean, I was expecting someone to get punched just because maybe Squee has been... had some violence directed at him by the people who hosted this talk for completely arbitrary relevant reasons, but that didn't happen at all.
No, there's no punching. The whole event was punch-free.
Yeah, punch-free. Yeah.
Punch-free.
Which basically shows that, you know, anarchists in general, at least around us, seem to not punch people very often.
No, we have... Wait, yes, they do. That would be the whole point of the debut of my nose on the show.
Oh, yeah. I guess that was an anarchist that punched you.
Yes.
That's true. That was a funny night. That's one way to look at it. We talked about that on Squee's first show, where someone I ended up out with one night decided they wanted to punch Squee in the face for no reason, which they said to me. Asked me if it was a good idea. I said, probably not. Asked me if Squee would enjoy being punched. I said, probably not. And then they went ahead and threw actually a very solid right cross at the nose of Squee, which is a very prominent Jew nose, an easy target. They picked the easy target, and they hit it right on.
Yeah, and I bled.
And you bled. On your favorite outfit.
It was one of my favorite outfits, but it got me right in between, you know, where the bone is and where the cartilage starts. Usually when I get punched in the nose, it's like where the bone is, and I don't wind up bleeding a bunch, but...
Yeah, so the biggest issue I have with self-care and the way people talk about it in this particular context, because I obviously have an issue with normal self-care for, like, activists, where it's like, take a bath and, like, put some sea salt in it and... Get an herbal.
Calm down.
Yeah, calm down, basically, just like, which is more or less like nurture yourself for like another shitty day at work that sucks, basically. But these people were talking about it in a different way, and they were kind of more or less saying, we're all damned, we're all fucked. And I think that's just kind of like an inverse way to look at the situation, and you're just flipping it around and keeping it as like a binary, and it's like Manichean at that point, right? I just need to throw that word in there once today. But... But I think it's kind of annoying that they do that, because the opposite of saying humans are good, right? Like, humans are good and you're a good person going around doing activism, is saying humans are bad, we're bad people. And there's just all this talk about, like, oh, do we want humanity to end? And that's, like, even assuming there is a humanity, or that, like, there's some objective value that can be possibly be placed on us as one of a billion species on this planet. It just seems super anthropocentric, which is funny because the whole point of the talk was... to get away from that, right?
Well, I mean, when you're talking about something in response to the norm, so for self-care stuff, it's all this advice for whatever normal people are, people that taking a bath with some fucking bullshit in it, like, will make you
Which
feel
actually,
better.
It actually does usually make you feel better, though.
Well, importantly better.
Yeah, sure.
So it's supposed to, I think, kind of be for everyone else, you know, the damned or whatever. And there, I thought there was, like, a difference in responses between people who were like, oh, I feel shittier and more depressed than most people, and people who were sort of like, well, no, I just changed the way that I look at the world, and then everything is better. And I thought there was sort of a... I don't think it was as binary.
I don't know, I guess that's just a feeling, because so many people were talking, and I think it's almost seen as... Especially people who want to, like, throw around the term nihilist without, like, using it just as a critique, but kind of want to wear it as, like, a shield against, like, people who view them, and, like, and kind of putting yourself as, like, yeah, I am that bad person. I'm a nihilist, and I don't care what you think, and I'll punch Squee in the face, and I'll, you know, I'll be beyond this person. I'm just talking in general now, but, like, you know, and I'll do the bad things, and I'll, and it doesn't matter, and I don't know. I kind of think that's, it doesn't really resonate with me that much. It feels like it's trying too hard and it's silly, and that it's not I don't know. I don't find value in that, I guess. Or I don't, aesthetically, I don't even enjoy it.
Sounds like another cage or a box or something.
Yeah, because then you always have to be bad, right? Because then you can't be nice and help people, even though those people all do. They all call their, I know these people that talk like this, they call their friends, they support their friends. Like, they have like social networks of, not even just online, of like actual friends they hang out with, and they have work friends and, you know, king friends or anarchy friends or whatever it be. And, you know, just like most of us here do.
Have you ever called yourself a nihilist?
Yeah, but like more so out of like laziness to people who I don't really want to engage with super directly. I don't think if I was trying to have a serious conversation, I would say that to someone. I think I'd use different words just because I think it's going to be totally misunderstood. And I think the way I'm a nihilist is a philosophical nihilist more so than anything, where I guess my nihilism, so far as it exists, would start with one simple sentence, which is there's no objective value or purpose or meaning in the universe so far as I see the real or whatever. And because of that, if I want anything to have meaning or value or anything for me, then I'm going to choose what it is. And it can be, like, for instance, this is why I like this book Hog by Sam Delaney, because it's just this super erotic porn novel, and the kid in the book, the narrator of the book, is an 11-year-old named Cocksucker, and he's trying to decide between, there's these two dudes on a boat who he wants to fuck, and then there's this other guy who's going to the woods to, like, do all this fucking gnarly shit to him, and it's generally seen in the book that he more or less is enjoying the things that are happening to him, and he's in the car with the guy who's taking him to the woods where he's gonna get tied up, and this kind of sounds ridiculous, but it's actually relevant to the story. And so this guy's got like this huge dick, and he can come a bunch, and these are the things he values. But this is basically just a story about arbitrary values. So he values the guy who can come a lot, like, you know, like 8 or 9 times a day, and who's got the big dick. But the other two guys on the boat, they don't fucking wash at all ever, and they don't come very often. So they've got like a massive amount of dick cheese built up, and he's super into that. And he, no joke, jumps out of the car, the final page, leaves the car to go back to the boats because he wants dick cheese, and that's the meaning he's living with his life. And I don't think Delaney has a criticism of that. I think he's just putting that out there.
And that's Rydra on philosophical nihilism. Yeah. I don't think I've ever called myself one, but I've been silent in the face of accusation.
Uh-huh.
And I've actually been very reserved about using the word. So I've never been very comfortable with it.
I tend to wield it more as a critique of things, and I think it's one of the most important things. Like, when I moved away from calling myself, which I only did for a little bit, like, a primitivist, because I have primitivist tendencies, and I would say my aesthetic, as far as I have one, which I think is the most important thing we have, right? Because an aesthetic is just, like, what do you want to see when you wake up and look at the world? And it's more than just clothing, but that's part of it. It's what kind of relationships do you want to see people having near you, with you? What kind of, like, you know, people talk about architecture. I'd rather not have... I guess I'll use that word too, because even if I was building a hut or something, it would be some form of architecture in that way. And so, like, what do you want the world to look like around you? So on that level, I think aesthetics is like by far the most important thing there is. Like, that's the most honest way that you can have some type of idea about these things. So insofar as I have an aesthetics, I would say it's a primitivist aesthetic. Like, I would personally prefer, like, if I had the choice to go outside. Maybe once I lived it, I wouldn't prefer it, but it seems that I would prefer to live in a small group of friends, like, where we, like, kind of took care of ourselves and did our own thing, where I was free to leave if I wanted to. You know, we didn't have a fucking jail. I didn't have to fucking, like, build Star Wars figurines and go to San Francisco and watch someone's kids who I'm not going to have, like, a lifelong relationship with. And those are just aesthetic choices for me. So I think you can kind of separate, like, realistically, like, once you get super dogmatic about primitivism, I think it obviously loses the value. But as an aesthetic choice, like, I would just be comfortable saying, like, anti-civ with a nihilist critique that allows me to choose these aesthetic preferences.
And that's what you were criticized for, right, by that Black and Green review?
Yeah.
Article?
Yeah, and the first one was, I was starting the conversation, then Bellamy, we were talking about Wild Reaction again, as we do. But he was saying, more or less, we were saying, they just destroy what's ugly to them. And is that not the entire anarchist position? To, like, how else, like, the whole problem of anarchy is that you can't have it if people are trying to fucking wield shit over you, unless you're talking about, like, interstitial spaces and moments and like the like, and if you want to get into big concepts of like, I can have anarchy in this second, and if you want to like take a really philosophical or like off different look at time and say, I can make that moment eternal and nothing else matters surrounding that moment, unless you're looking at it that way, then it's not going to work, you know?
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I can understand the what they're getting at now.
Yeah. So that's...
Well,
that's,
you know, it was reposted to Anarchist News, I guess, like a week ago or
something. Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
And I read it and I was just like, what the fuck is this? Why are they even... fuck are they doing?
Yeah, I thought it was kind of a bizarre way to, like, do an attack, more or less, because, I don't know, it was just strange to me. It didn't seem very well thought out. Like, you don't want to destroy what's ugly to you? Even, I'm definitely not a primitivist, but wouldn't a primitivist want to do that? Don't they want to destabilize and destroy all of industrial civilization? Isn't that ugly to them? Is it not ugly? You know?
Exactly. Well... Or they might be ecocentric. And...
But, I mean, people write essays on this. So there's tons of primitivist essays that I'm sure Black and Green Review is interested in and has published or, like, has... Or back in Green Anarchy days or things that they... The people who are involved in that project would support, Green Anarchy Magazine I'm talking about now, where they're talking about, like, the horrors and the, like, the heinous atrocities and, like, the disgusting things we have to look at. Like, I don't know. That's one of the things that, like, made me an anarchist, is just fucking walking outside my house. Like, when I lived in Hawaii, when I walk outside and I take my surfboard like 2 miles to the beach, like if I'm just doing a casual bike ride down, hold my surfboard, I see tons of fucking terrible shit. I see businesses. I see people working fucking shit jobs. Like when I used to wake up in the morning and smoke in the city, I lived in the Outer Sunset down by the beach, you know, and there'd be like 20 people out there just smoking cigarettes, breathing like hot breath into the cold air. And sure, there's like a nice feeling that goes into that, but that's also a feeling based on suffering because we're all fucking up at a time we don't want to be. Smoking cigarettes because we hate the fucking world and we're fucking sitting there like in this super heinous situation together. Ideally, we'd all fucking just go take a walk and eat a fucking omelet, but that's not happening. That's sure as fuck not happening, you know? And that's ugly. And like sometimes like something that's ugly can also be beautiful, you know? Like there can be beauty and suffering on some level, right? But at the same time, like why choose that? Like that's not my preference. My preference would be to go fucking sit on the beach and hang out with my friends.
Yeah, well, I don't want to get into my whole art thing after the redonkulous arguments I was getting into about that.
You don't want to?
No, I don't want to.
Really? All right, that's fine.
I mean, you know, I'd have to look at it and remember what I said, and I don't do those things naturally.
Have either of you guys read Crime Thinks Insubordinate Care?
No.
Okay, so more or less, they're making the argument that they wrote a thing. The two things I like that Crime Thing have done for the most part are the, like, Your Politics Are Boring as Fuck and Insubordinate Care. Because I think Insubordinate Care is actually really interesting because they're talking about self-care in a different way. And it's not as, maybe I'm wrong here and you can point that out, but it didn't seem as, like, inverse of the good as, like, a regular activist-y self-care thing would be. They were more in that essay talking about maybe it's self-care to, like, break something or to, like, do some type of resistance, even if it's super risentimenti and has no purpose and does nothing, you know, in the way that Wild Reaction or someone make an argument like we blew something up and it didn't do anything and we don't want it to. We just fucking didn't want to see that thing exist anymore. And
I think this is coming back to me, actually.
Do it.
No, I mean, I'm just, as you're saying it, I'm remembering it.
Oh, Insubordinate Care.
Yeah. Likewise, yeah. Because I remember as the self is otherzine. And... yeah, I really like that part of it encouraging just to do what you want because it feels good and self-care as potential of destruction.
Yeah, I think that was one of the coolest parts. It was like, hey, instead of like sitting and destroying yourself, because, you know, some people do that. Like, you know, I've been burning myself off and on for like the last 20 years, basically. And like a lot of people do shit like that because, you know, things fucking suck and sometimes you turn it inward. Maybe it's more interesting and maybe it'll be more fun or feel better one day to fucking burn something that's not your arm or leg or something, you know? More or less.
Yeah, I understand that.
Yeah, so I thought...
That's a whole story, but...
No, do it, tell it.
Well, so, you know, I had at one point in my life been a cutter of, in one way or another, meaning different instruments. But I didn't... It would be self-care in the sense that I was so dissociated from my own body. That was the only thing I could figure out to do to get back into it and get out of my head.
Yeah, I think the one thing I've found that's interesting about self-harm stuff, now that we're just going into this territory, is that people do it for such different reasons. Like, I've dated and had best friends and stuff that do stuff. And, like, at least for me, the reason I've always done stuff is, like, to punish myself for doing things I didn't want to do or, like, I knew would make me upset later. And I would go do them. Like, I would go, you know, whatever it was. Like, I would go hang out with someone I didn't want to hang out with and I knew would feel shitty. And, like, and I'd be stuck with them for a long time and hating everything. And I'd fucking, you know, come back and punish myself for that. And other people do things to feel something because they feel nothing or they feel too much and they want to displace the pain. There's, like, a million reasons people do these things. And I think the mistake just in general is people think that just because they do something similar, it's the same thing, or that can be so easily classified.
Wasn't that, like, the problem with tactics and all these moral interpretations of things in general is that it's totally without the content of someone's motivations? Not that you should judge everything by motivations, but they're there.
Yeah. No, totally.
I mean, they're the preceding, antecedent shit around the fucking thing.
Yeah, I mean,
I could be any more eloquent with that.
Well, because I think a lot of people say that thing, like, oh, they did an action, it's so much more awesome because they don't have a communique. Like, whoever's cutting, I don't know, probably some people listening, and maybe you guys know, but, like, for, like, the last few years, there's been, like, a lot of fiber optics cables getting cut, and someone shot up a substation with, like, machine guns in San Jose, which is an hour drive south of where we are here in the Bay Area. It's, like, in the South Bay. But there's been, like, a lot of these attacks on internet and, like, cable infrastructure, but there's no communiques about it. Like, no one knows why it's happening, who's doing it. And, I don't know, I hear people saying all the time, like, oh, it's better because they're not putting a communique out there, but then also people don't know what their intentions are. I know, I guess that's kind of a bigger question about art, and that's where, like, I guess that's where destruction becomes art, or more or less is art, or, I don't know, is it separable at all?
Well, yeah, it's separable. You could be destructive for totally rational reasons. This is the whole, like,
so is arc art, of... art is irrational inherently? Is that what you're saying?
No. No. I look at art as a mix of both. I mean, there's some sort of rationality that goes into figuring out how to deal with the materials. You know, like the clay or the tools that you're using to write or paint or whatever. Or building... But there could be, like, overly rational, like, socialist realism or, like, very formulaic forms of poetry and music, like a lot of classical music that are really about the emphasizing the rational elegance of something.
So this is the Apollo and Dionysus thing we were getting into the other day.
Right. I mean, that whole book, The Birth of Tragedy, is about art.
Which book is that? I'm not familiar with that one.
Nietzsche, The Birth of Tragedy.
Oh, that one, yeah. Okay.
So, yes, it's definitely about... That's where he really introduces the analysis of that. But yes, it's very much about Apollo and Dionysus and this the way that these things interacted in Greek theater, more or less, and how tragedy became shitty when it became overly rational.
Yeah.
And Apollonian.
And that's how John Gray talks about it too when he gets really into these things, and I thought that was really interesting to think about it that way. Also, Apollonian is a good word.
Yep. So,
was there anything interesting you guys thought anyone said at the self-care presentation that challenged you?
Well, I could barely hear anything. That was that had a huge impact on my whole interpretation of the event.
It's also because you wanted to smoke cigarettes in the back row.
Yeah, I didn't have the confidence yet to smoke them in the front row.
That was the most interesting thing to me about the book fair, because it was outside, and it was how bold were people going to get about their cigarette smoking? Because I thought I was bold. I think I tend to be bold, because I light up places where people tell me not to pretty frequently. Because fuck you, I've had cancer, and why don't you get some too? But that's my general take on it. It's like, that's my general take on anything. If I had to suffer, I want everyone else to suffer the same way I did, which is probably a pretty childish position, but it's hard to deviate from.
I'm glad you want to communicate.
Yeah, I want to communicate. Yeah, I want other people to feel my pain, even though they can never feel it exactly as I do, until we build some type of machine or telepathic thing, or gain collective consciousness back from some of my wingnut views. But people would get closer. Some people were even getting, like, near the front row and smoking, just blowing it all over everyone. And no one seemed to be saying anything. It's an interesting exercise in people standing up for themselves when someone lights up a cigarette when you're surrounded by, like, 20, 30 people.
In, like, ambiguous territory.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's really fucking interesting, right? Because when I was in L.A., I, like, almost got into a fist fight with two people at a bar because I was smoking a cigarette outside on the in the outside seating, and they wanted to talk shit and tell me to, like, smoke further away, and I said, fuck you, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
I haven't had that problem out here so much, but I know it could definitely come up as, like, fighting words.
I mean, when I was in high school, I fucking hated cigarette smoking, especially at the beach, and probably because my dad smoked, like, 3 packs a day till I was, like, a teenager, basically. Like, he was fucking, he was on that shit, you know? He didn't give a fuck, just doing it. And anytime I saw someone smoking a cigarette at the beach, I would go out of my way, like, drop my surfboard, walk over to them, like, ask them once nicely if it was not a positive response to the cigarette going out, like, there was a fucking problem. Like, they do not smoke or litter on my beach. Which is, I think, the first step to a nihilist life is throwing your trash, like, just straight onto the street. Kind of accepting that the street and the landfill are the same thing. I think that's what a nihilism actually is. A lot of people want to say it's, you know, the value thing, or they want to say it means you're a nihilist anarchist and you don't believe in revolution or whatever. But I think it's littering. I think that's the real, true nihilism.
Well, I don't even believe it's littering. I just think it's cluttering.
Exactly. That's what I would say. Like, right. You're kind of just saying, like, fuck your clean box, fuck your landfill, and you look at everyone else around you, and you throw the trash, and you say it's all the fucking shit. The whole city's a garbage can, motherfucker. And then you move on with your day.
But then again, you know, I'm super paranoid about cigarette butts coming from a place that basically exists on the lack of water. And just throwing them everywhere could start fires, which...
Sounds like an even more active nihilism.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're a nihilist who's afraid of fire. Well, you're not a nihilist, but...
You can only find new apartments so many times before you get sick of burning your own down.
Oh, no. All right. I don't know. What else did you think about the self-care thing? Was there anything else you had to say about it in general? I think they definitely... I don't know. I'm almost wishing we had done the presentation now at this point, because I think it could actually be a very interesting conversation if taken in the right direction, especially if you try to move the conversation away from the normal way it's talked about. But
I've said as much as I can for what I heard.
All right. Well, the other presentation that happened by this real fucking asshole dandy we know sitting right next to us. So you want to talk a little about why you chose to give a presentation, if there was any value in it, if it was the biggest mistake of your life? What say you, Squee?
Oh, cool. So we'll do a mind behind the matter thing, right?
Yeah, like we're pulling back the curtain. Oz is here behind. You're still veiled in the disembodied voice secrecy of podcast land. But
so I had,
you're outed from something else.
You realize I have like pictures of myself on my blog and shit, right? I'm not that much of a hidden entity. Why did I do it? Well, my sinister motives were that there weren't a lot of submissions for presentations, and I felt like I needed to do something to fill in the gap. And the topic was something that I initially proposed for the theme for the entire event, so I felt a little bit married to it, and like I had to give some kind of content to explain why I even thought it was a good idea.
Well, what the fuck did you talk about? Because I wasn't there.
Oh,
I was busy doing the table.
I gave a presentation on post-modernity and the appeal of anarchism, which didn't exactly go the direction I thought it was going to go, because I failed to emphasize that by appeal, I didn't necessarily want people to think about how to appeal to others, but what was appealing about anarchism to them.
Oh, okay. And people pushed it outward.
Yeah, and that probably has a lot to do with the way that I framed everything and did this whole historical narrative about the development of the world since the Enlightenment. And
oh, yeah, I actually did catch the first few minutes when I was in the back, and then I had to go back. But where did it go from there exactly? Were there interesting questions? Like, well, I mean, was this what you were talking about on the radio the other day, or did you have something else to say?
What? It did come back to what I was talking about a little bit, but there are basically two parts. The first part was just a timeline from the 19th and 20th century all the way to now, talking about the development of industrial capitalism and, you know, various cultural things that related to that. Then the second part was a focus on the way that anarchists have tried to appeal to people within different periods on that timeline. And then to pose the question, so now that we're in this sort of new phase starting roughly in the 2000s of culture that's mediated by so much digital technology, what is the appeal of anarchism to people? And I mentioned the documentaries that we talked about on that other episode.
Right.
And
what is it, the two, what are they called?
The Merchants of Cool and Generation Like.
Right.
And, you know, talked a little bit about these three templates that I use to look at different forms of anarchism, which solve a lot of internal conflicts for me as far as how to think about them. So, like, a template based on mass and masses, one based on groups or subcultures, and then one based on the individual and the personal. And, you know, what I was proposing is that we're in a time period now where people almost only give a shit about the personal and the individual, hence the way that corporations and the state try to appeal to people.
Yeah, I guess I'm interested in thinking about that because I guess we were talking about it earlier today, but we didn't really get there. But talking about, you weren't there, Squee, but Kelps and I were on the roof talking with another person and about the appeal of like insurrection anarchy, and this other person was making the argument that it was like a very interesting like historical materialist argument is like how I would call it, but it was the idea that rebels create more rebels. Like it was basically a propaganda of the deed argument. But what they were saying was, like, you know, when people do shit, like, in Greece or here or in Canada or wherever it happens, like, other people are inspired and rebel. And we are rebels because of the history of rebellion, more or less. And I was making do you agree with that?
That actually was a big part of the conversation that happened after I was done yelling at everyone.
Yeah, because I disagree. I don't think I need history to rebel. I think I would like to think I'm more ahistorical in the way I do things and the way I see things, and that I don't necessarily need to see what people have done before me unless I'm like interested in more. I guess the way I'm more interested in is looking at like places where people failed or why, and not even just tactics, but like what happened. But I'm not necessarily always inspired by these things. Sometimes I'm actually uninspired by things. Like, I think it's cool that people gave up their life or were willing to die or, you know, spend their whole life on these projects that may have led towards something I was more interested in. But I think at the same time, like, the person asked me basically, like, well, would you be who you are today if, you know, you didn't know about any of these things? And if you just, like, grow up, like, imagine our world was totally different and it wasn't just, like, the shitty history classes you get. Imagine if they actually were completely, there was no way to get information, there was no internet, you had no real access to, like, histories of rebellion or revolts around you, like a sci-fi dystopia where things are even worse here, worse than they are now, or imaginably worse, where, you know, it's daily life, it's routine, you can't break outside of it at all, right? And would you rebel in a situation where you had no knowledge of other rebellion? So how would you, like, because I would say yes, but...
I mean, the same response that I gave during the discussion was, I think it's more about contingencies, not, this isn't verbatim, you know, what has happened throughout history that shape your options, than it is about ideas. I don't really care about the,
like what Peter Kropotkin was writing 100 years ago or something like that, they're saying? Or like,
well, how do I put this? I mean, there's a certain way that I think that ideas are contingent upon what you can do in your everyday life. So, for instance, you know, if you are part of a labor union that's active in the way that labor unions were active in the early, you know, modern period, then it's going to make a hell of a lot more sense to be an anarchist communist, right? But I don't... So there's that kind of contingency, but I don't see ideas in a vacuum almost ever.
Yeah, but I would still say an idea like that that's inherently reformist in and of itself, or like a lot of the things that they were fighting for, like whether it was like the obvious one we can look at, like the 8-hour day, right? Like that was a lot of the stuff that was going on for like a lot of anarchists at that time were putting their work into that, you know? And we even have the fucking Against Me song, you know, where it's like we fought, you know, for the 8-hour day, you know? Like who gives a fuck?
Well, the theory was that, you know, these piecemeal reforms would pave the way for the syndicalist takeover of industrial means of production, right?
But, I mean, there were also other people at the time doing other stuff. Like, you know, McKinley got murdered. Like, things happened that were different than that. Like, other ideas were around is all I'm saying. I'd be surprised if there's a period in history where there wasn't a few individuals or small groups fighting, like, the main reformist group that seems to always be the one holding, like, the eye of whatever's going on, you know?
You're, like, bringing up all the shit that I, like, headed off during my presentation by, like, addressing it before we got to the discussion.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want to talk about these things. Like, so I was mostly discussing the status quo discourse at the time and revolutionary responses to it, whether that was, like, you know, revolutions to create a republic instead of having an aristocracy that ruled you,
uh-huh,
or you're a socialist or a communist or an anarchist. Yeah, the ideas have always been around. But the whole fucking point is where is power behind those ideas? And that power is contingent upon the historical context you're in. And I think this is explanatory for why some ideas are more popular than others. Who would be an anarchist communist now, right? It's like a 15-year-old today.
I mean,
and told them that they should fucking join the anarcho-syndicalist union.
I disagree. I think most of the anarchists we know are anarchist communists. Like, not in terms of who we're friends with, but I think if you push people at the book fair yesterday who showed up, you would find a fucking fuck ton more anarchist communists than anything else. I still think that's the popular idea. Like, when you look online, like, you go to the Anarchist Library Facebook group, like, that shit's popular as fuck. Like, social anarchy is more or less, like, the way it's often talked about in that context. The popular version of it is social democracy, like, federations, fucking boring shit, communism.
Where are there federations?
Federation's a little extreme, but...
But that's the point.
Is that... Like, you're saying there's no power behind it.
Yes, and even when you are an anarchist communist now, you're an insurrectionary anarchist that thinks anarchist communism might come from insurrectionary activity.
Okay, so
you're not a revolutionary anarchist communist like Kropotkin or Bakunin, who is a collectivist, but whatever.
Okay, for the sake of argument, I'll agree with you right now, and I'm asking the question, so where is the power right now then? Are you saying there's power in insurrectionary anarchy?
No.
Okay.
So my whole thing was to get to this digital age where everything is individuated because of the fucking internet. And power is in data analysis and targeted marketing and shit like that. And that's why I started referencing that documentary.
Okay.
And my suggestion isn't that anarchists should be targeting audiences the way that corporations do, but that should at least be a node on the map to critique and attack.
So you're saying power lies in who can read the rolling matrix better?
Yes. Like billions of dollars.
Yeah. Because money is power. Is that what you're saying?
Have you not experienced that power? That
the power of money?
Yes.
It has power over me, sure.
What were you saying about the toys you make?
Isn't power just power?
I don't know. Is the in itself also not?
Well, I guess on some level it has... Well, I'm just thinking... I guess on some level it has to do with money, too. I'm going to go full pop culture here. House of Cards, Kevin Spacey plays a character that becomes the president. And there's a big scene with him and one of his underlings who's like his number one guy for a long time. And he looks at him and he's like, where the guy's kind of having a fall because Kevin Spacey could have made money and the other guy chose to go into lobbying instead of staying in politics, basically. And he looks at him and he says, you made the mistake of choosing money over power. Power is power.
But that's mystifying power. That's spiritualizing it almost. Because, yeah, money's a technology, right? It represents power.
Uh-huh.
But where do you ever see raw power? I mean, even in science, it's not measured really... in a raw way, it's measured as one of the components of an equation.
What do you mean by that?
There's an equation for how to measure power, and I think it's like force and I forget what the equation is, but it's not a thing in itself in this sort of like there's a platonic form that is power.
And are you saying I'm making an abstraction out of it by using this?
I'm saying if you use a phrase like, yes, but I don't know if that's what you want to do. But the phrase "power is power" is an identity. It's an in itself phrase.
Yeah, I mean, I was being a little bit sarcastic about it, but I guess part of it too is once you have that power, you have the entire money where you can just borrow trillions of dollars once you're in charge, and you have the money behind you, et cetera, and all that stuff.
Yes, ish.
Sort of.
Ish.
I know it's kind of confusing. Like, where does power lie? Because, like, this is normally a wingnut conversation, right? Like, when we see this online, we see people saying, like, there's a cabal, or the Koch brothers are the ones who really run America, or, like, it's blah, blah, blah. Like, it's usually something that I don't really hear anarchists talk about that much, or anarchists that I'm interested in talking about is, like, who's actually holding the power. It's more like there's various forms of power, I guess, and we want it all gone or something.
Well, I think the first wrong thing to do is to try to think about human power at the beginning of the conversation instead of thinking about power more generally in a physics form.
Yeah.
Where you're thinking about how to get power from the sun or from something else and understanding basic mechanics of what the notion even means. Right. Because by the time you get to human beings, you don't know what the fuck you're talking about anymore.
Yeah, that is a pretty anthropocentric way of thinking about it, or narrow way.
It's very hard to get to a point to where two people are using the same terminology to talk about the same thing.
Yeah, which basically brings up the question of why are we even using words at all?
Because we don't have power.
That's true. So we need money. And is that what I'm saying? You're saying once we get the money,
we won't need words.
Or once we harness the sun.
Once we have the sun in a laser beam gun, we won't need money.
Okay. We just need a weird science it.
No, it's got to be magic.
Oh, now we're going to get into a cult conversation.
Yeah, where's that on this? No one went to The Poodle Bites, The Poodle Chews It.
Oh, yeah. I think it was late in the day. I think late talks suffer from burnout of the being surrounded by millions of people thing. By millions, I mean like 100 people.
Yeah, how many people do you think were there? I didn't do any kind of head count for anything.
Hey, you're trying to get real sciencey on me today. You're talking about the science of power, raw numbers, data analysis. Now you want me to classify, taxonomize. What
types of people do you think showed up? Was it the social anarchists?
It was actually, there's a lot of tall anarchists there, believe it or not.
Tall anarchists, yeah. I must have scared them all off.
With what your fancy outfit.
All right,
we got anything else today? I think that's probably about it. Kelpsey, you got anything? No? All right. Thank you, Kelpsey, for joining the show. Squee, I don't think he's going to thank you, so sorry about that. This is Free Radical Radio. You can find us on freeradicalradio.net. You can email us at freeradicalradio@riseup.net. We have shirts. If you're listening at this point, send us an email. And check out our audiobooks, freeradicalradio.net. We have a whole audiobook stuff. We put up stuff by Harlan Ellison, two really good things. Silent in Gehenna, which is about a guy who's in like a post or like a more, I don't know how to explain, like a more military run United States, and he ends up blowing some stuff up and kind of finding the futility in his one man rebellion. And then there's a really good one about alien sex. So if you're into the perfect fuck in the universe, go ahead and listen to How's the Nightlife on Casaldo. This is Free Radical Radio. Thanks for listening.